American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
Oh, it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting for you tonight for Monday, September 8th, 2008. That's right, you're listening to Newsreel, the live global sit-rep on core political tuning technology and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these stories, news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury, and as well, we are broadcasting inside of Second Life Node Archers, 137-102-9999, and as always, we're still pumping out loud and proud amongst the new wasteland down there at 3403-19.41 North. And at 117.37, 29.50 West. Got some feedback right off the top to you, Sean. Funny story. Now, I'm going to make a comment. I'm not going to give this guy's name out here, but this is an interesting piece of feedback. Dear Sean, funny story. A friend and I were walking down the street from the mall, and we're stopped by a cop. Apparently, someone had called us in for talking about smoking pot. And because I was carrying my GI Tanto, which is legal in California, so they sat us down, took my blade, searched us, checked our IDs, basic stuff. You know, I'd be okay with the taking of my blade, but they started playing with it. Stabbing it to the ground, flipping it into the air in the street. It's my understanding that you don't play with someone else's weapon, or any weapon for that matter, and it just pisses me off, because I'm a minor and they can play with my shit. Also, my friend has a skin condition that makes him allergic to sunlight. When asked to pull his hood off because it was too bright, the cops started swearing at him, told him not to bitch about the fucking sunlight, actual words, which then proceeded to imply that we were gay and that us having the same middle name is cute. So, of course, we weren't doing anything wrong. They let us go, told me I should get a smaller blade. I won't, and left. Thankfully, they gave me my knife back. I'm happy for that. I just wish they wouldn't have respected my blade and my friend, especially since neither of us were doing anything wrong, and we have a squeaky clean records. All around, it was a pretty fun time. My first time being stopped by the cops, and it made me realize I have to obey them. I can't trust them to be mature about their job. I wanted to know what you think. P.S. When are you releasing Patrolling Season 3? I'm getting antsy. Okay, well, a couple things here. First of all, what are you doing walking around talking about doing an illegal activity in a public place? Okay, right off the top. Okay, you got reported because you were stupid talking about an illegal activity in a public place. All right, that's for starters. Second of all, you're walking around with a fixed blade, like overt going loud kind of weapon on your pocket as a concealed weapon. Okay, and you're referring to it as a weapon. This is all wrong. All wrong. You shouldn't be walking around with a knife that size, as definitely not as a fixed blade. I mean, I'm all for carrying utility tools, but don't go walking around carrying weapons to hurt people and stuff. That's just stupid. And when you get pulled over by the cops, if you'd have had a sensibly sized folder on you, okay, that probably wouldn't have been an issue. Just be like, well, whatever, no, we weren't saying anything, thanks very much. I mean, everybody's got to investigate, and they've got to look at what they have to work with. If you get pulled over, there's a couple of guys wearing hoods. They look pretty pale and pasty and kind of scary looking, and one of them's got a great big knife on them. I mean, what are you going to think? You know, what are you going to do? You got to think about this stuff. You know what I mean? That was the whole purpose of patrolling Season 2, was to kind of take things from going more overt into more covert. You got to think, man. I mean, don't give these guys reasons to lock you up. There's no reason to be carrying around a fixed blade. No reason at all. I mean, you can get a folder just about any size, okay? So just, you know, start thinking about what you... Realistically, if you're that freaked out, if you're that nervous about being attacked, you should be looking into getting yourself some martial arts lessons and some practical mat time in actual physical confrontations so that you feel more secure about your own personal safety. Okay, this is what you need to do. You can't be just walking around, you know, talking about doing drugs in public places and then, you know, carrying weapons. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You're lucky that they didn't take your knife. I can't believe it. If I'd have been the cop, I probably would have took your knife. Like, come on. Think about it logically. You know, I understand what you're saying here, and I see that you're trying to appreciate that. But you need to understand that you're not going to be walking around with knives. And you know, you shouldn't be, like, what are you doing? You're a minor. You shouldn't be smoking grass anyway. Like, come on. Smarten up. All right, on to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, as I rapidly approach the end of my high school years, I find myself wondering what to do after it all ends. What do I do with myself in the short term? A lot of my friends plan to take a gap year or a sabbatical-type delay between school and university. I had planned to do the same, but recently a new option reared its head. It's standard-issue helmet-wearing head. Apparently, the Australian Defence Force offers a gap year program. Aside from a full year's worth of training that could quite possibly come in handy later in life, and work with no chance that I can proceed of being sent off to die or being called up afterwards, well, I mean, that's always a risk, right? I get $36,500 monies. Now, in the short term, it's if I follow the crowd, do the same as many of my classmates plan, i.e. take off and see the world, or get the opportunity with the ADF. P.S. I'm at this time collecting a large amount of PDFs useful to WOGs and intend to making it available for download sometime. Well, if it was up to me, I mean, I could feed you a lot of stuff about, you know, it's your decision, yada, yada, yada. But presented with the scenario that you're telling me right now, sign up. Go ahead, do it. What the hell? You know, understand that there is a chance that you will be able to be required upon to kill people. And depending on what particular trade you want to go into and all the rest of it. But yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, the experience will only help you and make you a more rounded person. My advice to you, start running now. If you think you can run now, you are wrong. You need to run more. Okay, if you are out of shape, don't even bother. Just start running. Get yourself so that you can run 10 miles every day if you need to. That's your goal. Okay? And if you're thinking I'm out of control on that, then you don't really understand what's going on with the military. Okay? So just trust me. If you're going to do anything, start running now. And good luck with that. Let me know how you make out. Because hopefully, you know, you'll do what you want to do. It's your decision. But yeah, why not? What the hell? Give it a go. See what happens. And Corporate Cult, I'm not going to use the guy's name. He's got a pretty unique handle, so he's pretty easy to track down. But Corporate Cult sent me his album and a snail mail letter. And I'm going to read this snail mail letter out here on the air. The album's really good. It's called Next, Corporate Cult Next. And it's got 13 tracks on it, and I'm going to put one of them on the end of the show. It's called That's the Lie. The guy's really talented. I mean, he's making good stuff. But anyway, it was kind of strange because I thought it was like, because we get all these like, you know, people sending us, you know, different types of music and stuff like that. So I thought it was just another, you know, promo, you know, that was coming in. I'm like, oh, okay, hey, that's really cool. I'm starting to get some Psytrance promos. So anyone who's signing us up for the Psytrance demo stuff, that's good. We like that. Sean, hey, greets from the Northeast Icebox. I wanted to send you our latest attempt at connecting with what's left of American gray matter. 100% homegrown, written and performed, recorded, mastered, reproduced, and distributed entirely by Whispering Ham Productions. That's me in the fucking basement. We're already one quarter of the way into our next album now, and reforming as a band that actually plays gigs somewhere besides the nether regions of computer processors and cyberspace. We had a baby 2.5 years ago, and holy shit, did that take the wind out of our sails as an activist for 2.5 years. Which brings me to the side note that I wanted to throw your way. Up until my son's birth, my wife and I spent most of our time walking out all over the U.S., doing activism, trying to connect with people, and figuring out how to live a more meaningful existence. Slapping homemade bumper stickers on Humvees in the dead of the night, etc., etc. Then we had a kid. It's taken us 2.5 years to get situated enough to rebuild our backpacks, equipment, food stores, stock ammo, and basically get in a position of readiness for whatever might come down the pike. Your work has helped me focus on that to a great degree, and I thank you. My question slash suggestion to you is, would you consider covering this angle on any of your show podcasts, namely, how the fuck to be a good tactically minded wad and a parent at the same time? I know you don't have any kids, but hell, I'm sure you could scrape some intel together on WOG moms and dads out there if we do exist. Most of us barely keep our heads above the water, but still manage to teach critical thinking, avoid public school systems, vaccines, mud hut brainwashing, shit food, and dumbass relatives that try to undo all of that every chance they get. It's lonely out here on the parental WOG frontier. We'd appreciate any insight you might have. Keep up all the good work. I still need a digital baptism as of 3/28/08, when you have a free moment in between running over pedophiles and doing rant check out our website, which is ihatethat.net. Nice guy. It's the center for our continuing struggle against sheer fucking stupidity that seems to reign supreme in our glorious country, Mexi-Americanada. I'll donate some Ameros if the mail is still running next month. Thanks again for enjoying our ranting as we do yours. Okay, and that's from Buddy, who I am now going to be nicknaming you. Your digital baptism is going to be Time Smack. So I think that Time Smack is an experience that happens. Everyone's had an experience with Time Smack. Time Smack is when the reality of the situation brings you into the present. Okay, it's similar to a reality check, but Time Smack is the actual moment that it arrives. Everyone has a date and a time for a Time Smack, you know. Like 9/11, that was a Time Smack, right? That's like a big one. So Time Smack is one of those, and the reason why I wanted to use that name is because 2.5 years ago, you know, you had a child. So your focus is to be a good parent. And in focusing on being a good parent, you are therefore a good WOG. Now, I know what you're thinking here. You're thinking, well, that's not really what I wanted. What I wanted was, you know, something that I felt some fulfillment in myself because I wanted to do some stuff related to the WOG world that gives me a little bit of a break and allows me to have some self-expression. The thing is about being a parent is that you really do have to focus on your child. You have to focus on your child's development. You have to constantly be thinking. If your child is 2.5 years old, buddy, your work is only beginning. You need to start thinking about how this child is going to act. How is this child going to talk to people? How is this child? What's this child's first experience is going to be? How are they going to see things? Are you going to let the internet show the world to your child, or are you going to show the world to your child? It makes more sense to be primarily motivated with your children. Okay, so right off the top, being a good WOG just means to be, well, I mean, other than the fact you say you're a WOG and all the rest of it, but you have to understand that this goes back to more covert rather than overt. It's about survival and adaptability. It's not so much about the tactical gear. Yeah, tactical gear is just a tool. It's a point, like a knife. It's just a tool. Okay, the mind is the ultimate weapon. Everything else is just incidental. That's another point. You know, I mean, if you're WOG enough, you know, you're not going to be worried about carrying around weapons and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, you know where some are in that, but you're not living in constant fear. The whole point of being a WOG is to be able to get out of fear. And that's the whole idea. I like your music, by the way. I think you're a bright guy. I think you're awesome. And I know that you want some tips on how to be a good parent, how to teach all this kind of stuff. And that, I don't know. I suppose if you filter everything through the eyes of love, I guess you'd be all right. And have a good sense of forgiveness and try to build the largest and most powerful self-image you can possibly have with your child, and make sure that they understand that, you know, they are perfect beings and all the rest of it and all that good stuff. But, I mean, luckily, I don't have to know. All I have to know is where my library card is, and I'll be able to turn into the ultimate parent. I mean, realistically, the kid's probably not going to be really talking that much for the next few years. I don't have many memories prior to 5. So you got about another 2.5 years to get yourself a wicked reading addiction and start getting focused on what it is that you're going to be doing. You have a son, and so you have a responsibility to make sure that you give that child the best life you possibly can. Beyond that, there is no greater task. There is no greater task. There's nothing more frustrating to me than these jerks who are sitting out there, you know, filthy, waving signs around saying, save the planet, save the planet. And these guys can't even get shoes that fit. You know, the whole point is you have to be able to look after your own. CYA, man, cover your ass. Got to make sure you look after your family first. That is a priority. Your music is very good. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Sounds like a plan. It's the best thing you can do. But don't ever sacrifice your family for your art. That is just dumb. All right, let's get into some news here. I didn't scroll down. All right, here we go. All right. News. Shadowrun news. Thanks to Fat Ninja. Very, very cool. Fat Ninja sends me the greatest stories. This is from September 4th. Israeli psychological warfare teams have again hacked Lebanese phone systems and sent recorded messages to most phone numbers up there asking for help in finding 5 Israeli soldiers lost in Lebanon over the last 22 years. A $10 million reward was offered for any useful information. Wow, that's pretty wild. The Lebanese have been able to stop the Israeli phone system hacks, which was first used on a wide scale during the 2006 war with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. In response, the Lebanese have complained to the UN, asserting that the Israeli phone hacking is a violation of the ceasefire that halted the 2006 fighting. So that means that phone phreaking is being considered as a serious weapon here. Israel not only hacks the Lebanese phone systems, but can also insert pro-Israeli content into TV and radio broadcasts. Snatch a brain back, zombie. Snatch back and hold it. Israeli internet hackers are believed to have thoroughly compromised websites in Lebanon. To the Israelis, this is just more information war. Using their technological superiority has always been the key to Israeli success in defending themselves against the numerically superior Arab nations that have, for over half a century, sought to destroy them. Yes, well, you know, so that's a pretty interesting story in how the InfoWar is progressing. And there's a lot of stuff going on with the InfoWar, a lot of stuff going on with tracking people and stuff like that. So, oh, there's a real problem coming up with the tracking. You know, I'm really concerned about that. So what's the first thing they're going to track? What did I say? What have I said? Was going to be the first thing they're going to start tracking. Right. It was going to be the immigrants. Well, here we go. In Man Tracker News, University of Arizona will use a $16 million grant to track migrants. This is from the Tucson Citizen. The University of Arizona on Wednesday laid out plans for its co-leadership role in the National Center for Border Security and Immigration Research. The University of Arizona was awarded a $16 million six-year grant from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in February to head up the research arm of the center, while the University of Texas at El Paso was giving about $6 million to lead the educational component. So what's the other $10 million for? At the University of Arizona, research will focus on developing new security technologies, gathering data about immigrants, and analyzing methods by which similar data have been gathered in past years, says Jay Cohen, the DHS Undersecretary for Science and Technology. Quote, we want to know how many immigrants are coming, how many illegal immigrants, where do they go, what do they do, how do they support the economy, said Jay Nunemaker, director of UA's Center for Management of Information in the Eller College of Management. Nunemaker will direct the National Center for Border Security and Immigration Research at U of A. Are you ready for this one? One of the security projects already underway is the laser Doppler vibrometer. He said the vibrometer measures someone's blood pressure and heart rate at a distance. Whoa. The tool is now used as is accurate to 10 yards, as long as the person at who it is aimed is not wearing a turtleneck shirt or has a beard. Note to self. Nunemaker says the goal is to make a laser beam that is aimed at the suspect's carotid artery invisible and have it to be accurate up to 100 yards. So they want to be able to take your blood rate at 100 yards, which is weird. We're trying to get a sense. Do people who are telling a lie give off different signals from people who are telling the truth? Well, maybe we're getting more than just... So they're talking about making a laser polygraph here. Cohen said Congress rightly decided that more research was needed on borders and the two pillars of research at universities and laboratories. Cohen added human elements. The human elements give us terrorists, and human elements will solve the terrorist threat. We are looking for those technologies that will make the border more efficient for legal commerce, more effective, and more secure. U.S. Republican Gabriel Giffords of Arizona, who attends the news conference opening at the UA Center, said there is always a struggle for balance between security and individual liberty, but that security is necessary to expedite commerce and speed up the legal traffic by detecting who's coming here legally and who is coming illegally. But post 9/11, there it is, bang, 9/11, we realize the homeland will be and has been attacked. Dun, 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 dun. It's been attacked. You know, post 9/11 world, man. World's going to crap, you know. It's being attacked all over the place, you know. Fear. Be afraid, you know. Anyway, most of the people were coming for economic reasons, but some are coming for criminal reasons. Cohen said those who doubted that there was need for secure borders should remember that some of the September 11th terrorists came through Canada. He said the drug trade is the biggest problem on the Mexico-U.S. border and that there's a fine line between a narco-criminal and a terrorist. Wow. There's a fine line between a narco-criminal and a terrorist. U of A president Robert N. Shelton said he thought UA won the competitive grant because of the strength of our scholarship and the UA's primary proximity to the border. Students from the majors all over the campus will have an opportunity to get involved in the six-year research project. Wow, that's pretty neat. A lot of interesting stuff going on there. So what do you do now? You want to talk, if I had a 2.5-year-old kid, you know, getting back to that other story. Here's something that I'd be looking at. You know, you want something that would be good for you to teach your kids. First of all, I'd probably get them as much language training as I possibly could. That'd be cool. Language training is always a good idea. As well, get them to do habits. Get them to do stretching every day, maybe some Qigong every day, and definitely teach them how to meditate. In Server Monk Hedna Hack News, experienced Zen meditators can clear their minds of distractions more quickly than novices, according to a new brain image study. After being interrupted by a word recognition task, experienced meditators' brains return faster to their pre-interruption condition, researchers at Emory University School of Medicine found. The results were published online in the Public Library of Science 1, PLOS 1. And it goes on to talk about this. Now, they're finding more and more benefits of meditation. Meditation is one of those kind of things that realistically, I mean, when you think about it, if you've got problems in your life, brain training is extremely, extremely important because realistically, the consciousness that is you, okay, the you that I'm talking to, the you that's understanding the words coming out of my mouth right now, lives inside of your brain, okay, whether it's an energy or whatever. But for case in point, we turn off the brain and you essentially stop, okay? So I'm just thinking now, if you were to be having problems and you couldn't get through something, I think if you were to focus on brain nutrition and brain exercise, chances are the solution will reveal itself because your brain obviously starts getting stronger and stronger. This just makes sense. So, I mean, there's some merit behind this, and I'm sure if you do a little bit of investigation, it might be worthwhile to get a good website. Maybe somebody can get me some good links that aren't too flowery and aren't too, you know, crazy. That talks about, you know, some very simple, practical ways to do some good meditation so that we could talk about that. Maybe I could do some experiments with it myself. I'd like to be able to, you know, I've got the capabilities to be able to meditate for maybe an hour a day. I don't know what's the optimum timing. Be interesting to try to check out. Beyond that, also, you know, reading is always important. Maybe reading is a type of meditation. I know they're doing a lot. I know they're doing a lot of research in that. So if you got any ideas, well, newsreel@randradio.com. But brain training is very, very important. I think it's something that WOGs need to be aware of, as well as brain nutrition, vitamin B complexes, ginkgo, you know what I mean? Look into it. Your brain is important. It's got to look after the brain case. Now, here's a weird story. You know, I'm not really super closed to, I listen to Coast AM, you betcha. You know, I'm not close to the idea of aliens and alien life. As a matter of fact, it gives me hope. You know, I kind of hope that maybe aliens will land on October 14th, you know, or 29th, or whenever the hell it is. You know, I honestly do hope that we're not alone and that aliens do show up. I mean, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great? You know, I mean, oh, if there was, I mean, you know, just the whole brain just goes off, you know? But, so, there's occasionally you get these weird stories. Now, you guys all remember Gary McKinnon, right? He's that British guy. He got busted for hacking, right? And he claimed that he was chasing after UFO stuff. Well, listen to this. Lawyers for Britain accused for hacking into secret military NASA computers are asking the Home Secretary to ensure he is not jailed inside the United States. They don't want to ship this kid to the States. Glasgow-born Gary McKinnon, who's 42, okay, who last month lost his appeal against extradition, could face life in jail if convicted for accessing 97 computers. So the rest of his life in jail. His lawyer, Karen Todner, said his human rights would be breached if he did not return to the UK after trial. The Home Office said his case was receiving consideration. A spokesman said further representations have been received today from solicitors against Mr. McKinnon's surrender to the USA, which are receiving consideration. Unemployed, Mr. McKinnon from Wood Green, North London, was said to be distraught after losing extradition appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. He has admitted to breaking into the computers, but he has said he sought information on UFOs and only got in because of a lack of security, because of lax security. U.S. government, however, insists he committed a malicious crime, the biggest computer military hack ever. They say he stole passwords, deleted files, and left 300 computers at the U.S. Navy weapons station unusable immediately after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Mr. Todner said he has written to the Home Office asking for intervention on her client's behalf. She said, we have requested that the Home Secretary obtain an assurance from the United States government that Mr. McKinnon will be returned to the U.K. immediately on receiving sentence in the U.S. should he be extradited. It's his standard practice for both the Dutch and Israeli governments to seek this assurance on behalf of their nationals who face extradition to the United States. In light of Mr. McKinnon's being diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, it would seem to be highly appropriate that the Home Secretary obtains this assurance. Mr. McKinnon was arrested in 2002, but never charged within the United Kingdom. He first lost his case against extradition in the High Court in 2006 before taking it to the High Court in the UK, the House of the Lords. His lawyers wanted his case to be tried in Britain, arguing that the alleged offenses were committed on British soil. James Welch, legal director for human rights group Liberty, said, clearly it is time to rethink extradition when a U.S. prosecutor is threatened to fry, quote-unquote, nonviolent computer hackers. It's a shame that when the Court of Human Rights will allow his extradition, even though they consider whether U.S. extradition measures were fair. A demonstration in support for Mr. McKinnon will be taking place outside of the Home Office on Tuesday. Now, so they're really trying to they're trying to nail this guy to the floor. They want to lock him up and throw away the key. And that's if, you know, he doesn't hit American soil and just get killed. Okay, so, you know, this guy claims that he wasn't, what would be his motive for terrorism? I mean, he's a 42-year-old unemployed misfit, right? So I found an interview with the guy. I've got a link to the website as well. And here's part of the interview. In 2002, Gary McKinnon was arrested by the UK's National High Crime Unit after being accused of hacking into NASA and US military computer networks. He says he spent 2 years looking for photographic evidence of alien spacecraft and advanced power technology. America now wants to put him on trial. If he's tried there, he could face 60 years behind bars. Banned from using the internet, Gary spoke to Clix presenter Spencer Kelly to tell his side of the story. Ahead of the extradition hearing on Wednesday, the 10th of May, you can read what he had to say here. Now, here's an excerpt. The whole interview's there. But apparently there was a group called the Disclosure Project. They published a book and which had 400 expert witnesses ranging from civilian air traffic controllers through military radar operators right up to chaps who were responsible for whether or not to launch nuclear missiles. There are some very credible, relied upon people all saying, yes, there is UFO technology, there's anti-gravity, there's free energy, there's and it's extraterrestrial in origin, and we've captured spacecraft and reverse engineered it. So the interviewer asked him, so what did you find inside of NASA? One of these people was a NASA photographic expert. She said that in Building 8 of the Johnson Space Center, they regularly airbrushed out images of UFOs from high-resolution satellite imaging. This is inside of this book. What she said there was folders. What she said was there. There were folders called filtered and unfiltered, processed and raw, something like that. I got one picture out of the folder, and bearing in mind this is a 56K dial-up, so very slow internet connection in the dial-up days using the remote control program, I tuned the color down to a 4-bit, so the screen resolution was really, really low, and even then the picture was still juddering as it came onto the screen. But what came onto the screen was amazing. It was a culmination of all my efforts. It was a picture of something that was definitely wasn't man-made. It was above the Earth's hemisphere, and it kind of looked like a satellite. It was cigar-shaped, and it had geodesic domes above, below, and to the left, and to the right of both ends. Although it was a low-resolution picture, it was very close up. The thing was hanging in space, the Earth's hemisphere visible below it, and no rivets, no seams, none of the stuff associated with normal man-made manufacturing. Wow, pretty heavy stuff. You know, I mean, he's probably a Looney Tune, but why would the United States want to have this guy, like, totally murdered? If this is all he's saying, I mean, no one's going to believe this guy. No one's going to believe what he has to say. But very, very interesting story nonetheless. It'd be interesting to see what happens to this guy. If they wind up killing him or really throwing away the key on this kid, you got to give his story a little bit more merit because they want to shut him up. That's what they want to do. Now, in Black Ice News, a computer virus is alive and well on the International Space Station. You gotta give it to the internet, you know? The first thing, we can't even keep it clean going to space. You know, you gotta feel kind of, if I wrote this virus, I'd probably feel like, it's pretty cool. A computer virus is alive and well on the International Space Station. NASA has confirmed that laptops carried to the International Space Station in July were infected with a virus known as Gamma AG. The worm was first detected on Earth in August 2007 and lurks on infected machines, waiting to steal login names for popular online games. NASA said it was not the first time computer viruses had traveled into space and was investigating how machines were infected. Orbital outbreak. Space news website SpaceRef broke the story about the virus on the laptops the astronauts took to the ISS. NASA told SpaceRef that no commander control systems of the ISS were at risk from the malicious program. The laptops were infected with the virus, were used to run nutritional programs, and let the astronauts periodically send email back to Earth. The laptops carried by astronauts reportedly do not have any antivirus software on them to prevent infection. Once more, it has scooped up passwords and login names. The Gamma AG worms tries to send them back to a central server. It targets a total of 10 games, most of which are popular in the Far East, such as MapleStory, Hang T Online, and Talesweaver. NASA is working with partners on the IIS to find out how the virus got into the laptop in the first place. Well, chances are the ISS has no direct net connection, and all traffic data traveling to the ground of the spacecraft is scanned before being transmitted, although it's thought the virus might have traveled via a flash or USB drive owned by an astronaut and then taken to space. The space agency also plans to put into place security systems to stop such incidents from happening in the future. NASA told the Wired News that a virus had infected laptops taken to the ISS on several occasions, but the outbreaks had always only been a nuisance. Very, very interesting stuff. So, you know, hey, you got a little bit of everything in that story there. You got some computer viruses, and, you know, you got it in space. You know, bam, bada-boom, bada-bing. There you go. Gotta love it. So let's talk about some UAV hunter-killer news. Always liking the UAVs. Stanford computer scientists have developed an artificial intelligence system that enables robotic helicopters to teach themselves to fly difficult stunts by watching other helicopters performing the same maneuvers. The result is an autonomous helicopter that can perform a complete air show of complex tricks on its own. Autonomous, not remote controlled. The stunts are by far the most difficult aerobatic maneuvers flown by any computer-controlled helicopter, said Andrew Ng, the professor directing the research of the graduate students at the Pure Able Adam... Andrew Ng, the professor directing the research of graduate students Peter Abiel, Adam Coates, Timothy Hunter, and Morgan Quigley. The Dazzling Air Show is an important demonstration of apprenticeship learning, in which robots learn by observing an expert rather than having software engineers peck away at keyboards and attempt to write instructions from scratch. Yeah, that's a really great idea. What could possibly go wrong there? I mean, really. You know, you got to look at that and go, whoa, yeah. You know, I mean, what could go? I mean, that's how they taught Kung Fu, wasn't it? I mean, really. I mean, I think that's how they taught Kung Fu. I don't know. It's very, very interesting to check out what is going to be going on with robotics in the future. You know, I want to see where they're going to be going with this stuff. I really do. It's like, there's so many combat and military applications. It just blows my mind. I cannot possibly, you know, think about where it's going to be. I mean, in the new book, I'm talking about some of this stuff, you know, robots and how they evolve and neural nets and that. But it's an exciting time to be writing After Now fiction. I'm glad I got myself doing that again. In less lethal news. Now, you want to talk about, here's an After Now device. This was from September 1, okay. If you've been watching Future Weapons on the Military Channel, you may have seen a segment on the X-Rep fin-stabilized taser shotgun round. It's a 12-gauge shotgun, which is miniaturized, self-contained, basically ballistically launched taser round developed, marketed, and soon to be produced by Taser International. The X-Rep, which stands for Extended Range Electronic Projectile, can be utilized to engage a subject up to 65 feet, 20 meters away, and combines blunt impact with Taser's trademark NMI, neuromuscular incapacitation effect on human targets. So shocking, people. The NMI effect is delivered to a hostile subject for 20 seconds via four sharp reflex engagement electrodes on the X-Rep projectile's nose that penetrate the subject's clothing and or skin upon impact. The Taser's X-Rep less lethal shotgun round is designed to counter any attempt by the subject to dislodge the device after impact, including grabbing the projectile or deployment card. On one way or the other, the X-Rep is going to be complete the circuit and disable the subject, including through the subject's hand. X-Rep is arguably a technological marvel, and assuming it works as reliably as advertised, could potentially become a game changer in active shooter scenarios. In that you law enforcement may be able to immediately disable an active shooter without having to utilize lethal force, which means they could potentially non-lethally neutralize and apprehend a subject alive and prosecute them instead of killing them. Defense Review is curious to know whether or not Taser's X-Rep technology can be combined with the Beretta LTX 700 shotgun 12-gauge, a.k.a. Beretta Kinetic Energy System, the CKS, and the Beretta Constant Kinetic Effect Weapon to allow the X-Rep to be deployed out of greater distances if necessary. The question is, how far can the X-Rep be fired accurately, and how can firing and how large a firing impulse accompanying G-forces can the X-Rep's electronics handle? In January 2008, Mossberg introduced a dedicated less lethal shotgun specifically for the X-Rep called the Taser X-12 LLS, less lethal shotgun. The Taser X-12 LLS is based on the Mossberg 500 pump-action shotgun platform, including a radial ammunition key technology, patent pending, and to prevent the shotgun from accepting lethal 12-gauge rounds, the rack element negates the possibility of the user accidentally loading a lethal round into the shotgun under stress. Defense Review contacted Taser co-founder CEO Rick Smith on his cell to find out when X-Breath was going into production and the price it would be offered. Mr. Smith informs us that the projected price is $100 to $120 per bullet and is proud to be and planned to be in production in January of 2008. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. Well, I don't know. Maybe that should be January 2009. Pretty interesting stuff, though. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, I think that's supposed to be January 2009. But, yeah, kind of wild. This is what they're going to be doing. And if you want to know more about this, why they need this kind of technology, let's look over to some police state news. Thanks to Moog for sending this one in. Don't bother looking for this story on the front pages of the New York Times, Washington Post, Guardian, or Wall Street Journal. Gestapo police state tactics apparently don't interest them. For months, people who you would describe as tinfoil hat wearers have been predicting the cancellation of the November 4th election, and gun ownership supporters have been fighting for their right to bear arms and protecting themselves from police state. Are they crazy? There is something coming down in the Minneapolis, St. Paul that looks very menacing. Very menacing, real, can't happen here, fascist Gestapo tactics that look like they're coordinated from on high with FBI and Homeland Security participation. Preventative strike forces by police have invaded homes of people planning protests or even plan to protect protesters by videotaping police. The victims of these raids have been forced to lie face down on the floor, been handcuffed, and their computer records and some money has been taken from them. This frightening abuse of constitutional rights has been done using vague claims that the police are preventing riots. So it's very interesting that now they're starting to kick in doors and say, no, you're a protester, you're you haven't done anything yet, but we're going to take you down. And of course, there's the argument, well, you know, Sean, if you wait until, you know, the protesters out there causing problems, and you can enter, you can, well, you know, you gotta, I mean, what are these people actually doing? The protesters don't really do anything. I mean, that's why protesting is kind of pointless. You know, you're not going to do anything. All you're going to do is line yourself up to get your house raided. You know, this is why I tell people, don't do that. Because you see it coming down the pipe. It's not about, you know, if you want to be a revolutionary, you got to be wise. Yeah, you got to be courageous and everything, but you got to be wise, because in order to survive, okay, in order for the revolution to exist, you have to survive. So survival is very, very important. You know, think about this, people. Think about this. Come on, stay with me here. In Arcology News, this is an interesting piece of story right here. Dubai's latest offering in carbon-neutral Pyramid City. Now, we've talked about over in Dubai over there. I mean, it's a pretty hostile country in that part of the world, right? So it only makes sense that they would be very interested in getting themselves a bit of an Arcology on the go. Seems like, and they got the kind of money that they could do it, too. I mean, it would be kind of an interesting place. I'd love to see one built, because even if it falls apart, wow, could you imagine how cool an abandoned Arcology would be? Like, seriously, that'd be just rad. But anyway, Ziggurat is the name of the temple towers of the ancient Mesopotamian Valley with characteristics of a terrace pyramid that successively receding stories. Now the name is about to enter a new phase. Timelinks, a Dubai-based pioneering environmental design company, has chosen it to describe a sustainable city of the future. The city, the shape of a futuristic pyramid, will be exhibited at Cityscape Dubai, according to Timelinks, that could support an entire community up to 1 million people by harnessing the power of nature. Ritus Matonis, managing director of Timelinks, said that the ziggurat communities can almost be self-sufficient energy-wise. Apart from using steam power in the building, we will also employ wind turbine technology to harness natural energy resources. Timelinks stressed that the project is not just about reducing carbon footprint. The 2.3 square kilometer pyramid has many other benefits. They propose that whole cities can be accommodated in complexes which take up less than 10% of the original land surface. Public and private landscaping will be used for leisure pursuits, irrigation, or as agricultural land. The concept will also aim at better quality of life for the inhabitants. Transport through the complex world, being connected as integrated 360-degree network, horizontal and vertically, so cars would be redundant. Biometrics would provide security with facial recognition technology. Martin Kramer, managing director of the International Institute for Urban Environments, told WAN, as a general reaction to the ziggurat project is viable from a technical point of view. However, reflecting from such a sustainable, holistic approach, we do wonder if the food supply and waste system are taken care of, as the concept seems rather based upon carbon neutrality and energy saving. Kramer's initial reaction to ziggurat also raises a very important issue. Are people willing to live in a mega building of 2.3 square kilometers? Well, consider the alternative. If the alternative is to starve outside in the burning sun, then yes, I'm willing to live inside the pyramid. Will the thought of living in a machine comfort people? Timelinks has already patented the design and the technology incorporated in the project and has applied to the European Union for a grant for the technical projects. And the intriguing mixed-use concept will be unveiled at Cityscape Dubai, which takes place at the Dubai International Exhibition Center from 6 to 9 October 2008. Someone could please fly me there. I'd like to go see that. Sounds like it's pretty cool. If you want to fly me there, maybe, you know, somebody could take some pictures and get them back to me. In Super Soldier News. Now, this is really wild because there's a character in the new book that, you know, sometimes as I do things in After Now, I'll make something up that's totally out of my own head. And then, like, 2 or 3 days later, I'll go and I'll read about similar technology being pioneered for the first time. And it's starting to get really, really creepy. Okay, like, really creepy. Now, this one here specifically, because there is a there's a character in the book who is has had this done to him, okay? He's one of these guys. And I'll just get through the story, but it just blew my mind that this is actually what's happening, because they're even doing it the same way that I said they'd do it. But anyway, this is from August 27th. Gene therapy is being talked about for the ultimate human running speed and strength. Professor Peter Wyand, Southern Methodist University of Texas, known for his expertise on terrestrial locomotion and human-animal performance, says that humans would soon have the ability to modify and greatly enhance muscle fiber and strength. This would enable speeds of 45 miles per hour and 5 second times for the 100-meter dash. The fast four-legged runners, or quadrupeds, do seem to be advantageous over versus bipeds on terms of mechanics allowed by their anatomy. So to go even faster would require people to successfully adopt running mechanics of four-legged animals running on their hands and feet. Coverage, which is, wow, that's quite the thing. DARPA is also spending $3 billion to enhance strength and endurance. So endurance enhancements in combination with the muscle speed enhancements could allow for sprinting for an entire mile. This would mean that 80 seconds to one, it would take 80 seconds to run 1 mile. 80 seconds to run a mile. So how many miles an hour is that? 1 minute and 20 seconds could also mean about 40 minutes to run a marathon. You know, that's 40 minutes to run a marathon. Chimpanzees have been estimated to possess 5 times human strength, and gorillas supposedly have 10 times human strength. Some gorillas believe to be able to lift 2 tons and can carry up trees. Most human strength activities, such as weightlifting, involve a degree of skill as well as strength. But it's possible that a human could bench press more weight of a gorilla, but it would tear the arms off the human. Gorillas and humans have variable strengths. A gorilla has very strong arms compared to a person. The speculation is that the silverback gorilla are 50 to 20 times as strong as a human. Maximizing human muscles with myostatin inhibition would double the strength of most people. Now, what they're also talking about here is starting to do experimentation where they're going to cross animals and people in a very limited way. So they're going to grow new muscles and new bone tissue so that people are able to, you know, maybe not lift 2 tons or tear trees out of the ground, but maybe lift 1 ton. You know, I mean, and if you don't think DARPA's willing to do this stuff, you got to bear in mind this has already been taking place. Where do you suppose we got all our laser vision surgery correction from? Where did that all come from? Well, it came out of Russia. And the Russia did all that stuff to their own military. The military has been the guinea pigs for everybody for a very long time. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing. I've had laser surgery, so hey, I like living in the future. You know, why not? Not a bad idea to me. But it's something you want to be aware of and just to take a look at, you know. The Army, you don't owe the Army anything. Make sure you can get the most out of it while you're there. Back to Buddy who's thinking about joining the Australian Defense Force. Today's daily hack is it's a real ninja server monk gizmo. This thing is really cool. I like this thing a lot, okay? It's how to set up a portable web server on a thumb drive. Talk about doing your burst transmissions. You know, if you need to get information out there, you can build a whole web server on a thumb drive. Talk about cool. Very, very slick stuff. And you're got a bunch of Recommedia, actually, today. One is from a band called Machina Supremacy. It's very wog metal bound, but sans songs about self-empowerment and dangers of commercialism. Lots of free songs on their website. Make sure you check it out. And I got another report here. Hey, Sean, just thought I'd like to send you a link to episode 3 of Tales from the After Now, the storm entitled Exodus. And they gave me a link to it there. That's all on the Live Journal page. It probably seems like I finished it in just a week, but I assure you it took much longer. Thanks for the high praise on your show. Whenever you get a chance to listen to them, I'd like to know what you think. Peace. And that's from Xander, who's responsible for doing some After Now stuff. Very, very cool. And I put it to you that it doesn't matter what I think about it. I put it to you, Xander, that it doesn't matter what I think about it. What matters is what you think about it and what your fans think about it. What I think about it is irrelevant. You know, I'm just tickled pink that you gave enough of a crap and liked the whole, you know, the genre I created. I'm happy about that. I'm very honored. And here's a really good one sent in to me by Skybers. Thank you very much, Skybers. It's about television under the swastika. Now, this is a Michael Clough's documentary about the history of Nazi television. As early as the 30s, a bitter rivalry raged in the world's first television broadcast. Nazi Germany wanted to beat competition from Great Britain, the U.S., at all costs. Spiegel TV has tracked down rare Nazi TV footage, complete with everything from bizarre cabaret acts to interviews with people like Albert Speer, pop culture done by the Nazis, and the banality of showbiz evil. Yeah, they got, like, naked chicks dancing in, like, the 1930s on television. It's like, wow, those crazy Nazis, what will they think of next? You know, they're just out of control. So, yeah, and of course, Rule 34 does apply. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you cannot donate, please distribute. Give out this program, give it to people, get word around, let people know if you're watching the show so that they can listen to the show also and have, you know, a chance at survival. And if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website now more than ever. We're working on this resort idea and this training location idea, and that's pretty much what the focus of the donations is going. I've noticed that since I've actually started talking to people about donating, you know, a lot more people have donated, and I wanted to say thanks a lot for that. We need to improve our system for the people who are donating. We need to have some sort of some folks get thank you letters, some folks don't. We need to come up with something better. We know there's only, you know, a couple of us running the show here. Again, we try to, rather than sending out the thank you letters, we try to get as much media as we can to you guys, because that's actually what you're paying for. So trust me, we do appreciate it. And as well, you can send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys and their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at Newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out some Psytrance. And now, as promised, I'm going to fade out with that track from the Corporate Cult album. The album is called Next, and the song is That's the Lie. And that was performed, of course, by Timesmack. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, hey, that's what Server said. End of line.
We've all got ADD. That's what my mother told me. 'Cause we can't stare at the wall like the other kids do. We want it all. And I don't like TV or what it's doing to me. And I don't wanna grow up to be a spaced out slave to the bank with a brand new truck. No, I just ain't right. 'Cause I wanna run like hell at a red light. So set me up with a cop out and remove my pain so I don't drop out. What a marvelous plan. Drop a pill in my hand. I'll go to work, come home, get drunk and watch TV. That's the life for me. apologize, but it's all right. You wouldn't remember after midnight. You change your story like you change the channel on that glowing box of lies. And I just don't want to raise a kid to be a spaced out slave to the bank to the day he dies. No, I just ain't right. 'Cause I wanna run like hell at a red light. So set me up with a cop out and remove my pain so I don't drop out. What a marvelous plan. Drop a pill in my hand. I'll go to work, come home, get drunk and watch TV. That's the life for me. When your reflection makes you so afraid, so acceptable today. When the question makes you turn away, with a cop out and remove my pain so I don't drop out. What a marvelous plan. Drop a pill in my hand. I'll go to work, come home, get drunk and watch TV. That's the life.